Welcome, and thank you for listening to the Jizo An Zen Community's Dharma Talks. We are happy to make these recordings available to you. Please consider making a one-time or recurring donation via the link on our webpage found under Become a Member. We thank you wholeheartedly. Gassho.
My talk with a quote, which says as follows. Living is an adventure and a challenge. It isn't about standing still and becoming safe. If anybody wants to keep creating, they have to be about change. Now this quote sounds like it might have come from any great Zen ancestor or Zen master, but it actually is a quote from someone who I feel is one of the greatest musicians, one of the greatest musical geniuses and creators to have ever walked the earth. And that is the great jazz legend, Miles Davis. This quote is from Miles Davis. And I titled my talk this evening, The Changing Chords in the Rhythm of Life. And I think some of you know from conversations over the years, I love music. I absolutely love music. I think it is one of the great gifts to the world, and I cannot imagine a world without music. And I love all different genres of music, but I'm particularly a huge fan of jazz. I love jazz music. I don't know where that love developed. I grew up in Camden, New Jersey, and I certainly did not grow up around jazz, listening to jazz as a kid. But somehow as an adult, I think it's probably kind of something from a past life or something, but I developed a great love of jazz. I love jazz music, and of course, again, Miles Davis for me is one of the greatest musicians and geniuses of music ever to live. And one of the things that I love about music in general, but jazz perhaps in particular, is that jazz is about change. Jazz is about improvisation. It's about creativity. And as Miles Davis says, it isn't about standing still, fixed, and unchanging. Jazz is about flowing with and not against the natural unfolding rhythms of the music. And jazz and other forms of music, I think, are about an unfolding natural flow of creativity that's constantly arising, dropping away, arising again, but always changing. And Miles Davis, who was a creative genius in his music, really points to that creativity and to life coming precisely from embracing change. He says it wasn't about standing still and becoming safe. It was about change. It was about creating. And that creating necessitated change constantly. It necessitated that constant flow, that constant unfolding. And in this, I often feel that the Dharma teachings, the teachings of the Buddha, the teachings of Buddhism, have much in common with jazz and with other forms of music. And one of my daughters recently, I have three daughters, and my daughters are all young women now. They're grown up. They're young women. But one of my daughters recently reminded me of something. She works in a little shop in Medford. And she says, well, you know, in the last few months, every time I go and I open up in the shop, I put on jazz music, right? I put on the, you know, kind of like soft jazz music, and I love listening to jazz music. And she says, I remember you always used to tell us, Dad, when we were younger, you used to explain jazz to us by saying, jazz is a conversation between instruments, right? Jazz is a conversation between instruments, between musicians. If you really listen, there's a conversation happening in jazz music. One musician says something and another musician responds and another responds. And jazz is really this conversation between musicians. It's a conversation between the instruments, and it's a beautiful conversation that's constantly flowing and unfolding. It's very much in the moment, and it very much embraces change. And I often will hear people say, when discussing music, and particularly jazz, that they don't like jazz. They say they don't j like jazz because they just don't get it. They're like, I don't get jazz. Well, I don't really like it because I don't get it. It sounds like kind of like a jumbled up mess to them, right? It's constantly changing, and it's like this jumbled up mess for a lot of people. I don't know if anyone here is a fan of jazz or loves jazz music, but I think this is often because people don't really take the time to pause long enough to really listen, to listen deeply to jazz music, to observe and to be with the music. And so they kind of automatically start to kind of reject it. They don't understand it, they don't hear the conversation that's happening between those musicians and those instruments. And so they kind of automatically reject it as something unfamiliar, I guess. But I think that often in life, in so many aspects of life, and particularly when it comes to change, we prefer to react from a place of habit mind, and we react with resistance and rejection. And in many ways, at least for me, this kind of mirrors our own minds and how we react to our own thoughts, and especially when we begin practicing meditation, right? There's all of this stuff going on. There's this constant dialogue, this constant conversation going on. And so we kind of react the way some people react to jazz. I just don't get it. There's just too much happening. There's too much happening. And we kind of react from that same place of not being comfortable if the conversation isn't very straightforward and linear. And we want everything to be very linear. We like for things to be straightforward. We like for things to be comfortable and easy. We like for them to be without all of the chord changes. But the chords are constantly changing. They're constantly flowing. They're constantly unfolding with new rhythms constantly arising, constantly dropping away, paving the way for new rhythms, paving the way for new creations. The Buddha taught that there were three primary forms of dukkha, or suffering, as we often translate it, but really more correctly translated as discontentment or dissatisfaction or dis-ease. And the Buddha taught that there were three primary forms of suffering. And one of those primary forms of suffering is the suffering of change. As human beings, most of us, I think, we struggle in one form or another with change. We struggle with change because we like for things to be safe. We like for things to be familiar. We like for things to remain the same. And of course, we don't always realize that we suffer with change. It's often happening to us in subtle forms, and we never really pause long enough, just like people don't pause long enough to listen to jazz, to really get jazz. We don't pause long enough to see how we suffer, how we create this dis-ease, this discontentment, because we don't want things to change, because we're constantly struggling and fighting against change. And we may think, many of us, we may think, well, I'm perfectly fine with change. I don't have any problem with change. I'm fine with it. But that is, at least until we directly experience impermanence or change in one form or another, a change that makes us feel uncomfortable. Then perhaps we notice, or we may notice if we pay attention to how uncomfortable we are with change when things change, when things take a turn, when they don't remain as we like them to remain. And we don't really, as human beings, we don't really like to be thrown off of that straight and narrow track, right? Not even a little. We like to remain on that track. We like for things to be rolling along smoothly on that track. And when we're thrown off the track a little bit, we become very uncomfortable with that, and we struggle against it. We often want to deny it or resist it, but we become uncomfortable being thrown off of that straight and narrow track. And then we very quickly fall back into our conditioning, our habitual patterns of mind, those habitual patterns of what I like, what I don't like, what I want, what I don't want, and of course the old, it should be this way, or it shouldn't be that way. We fall into these habit patterns of mind like that. Things change, they take a turn, and we immediately fall into those likes and dislikes, should be, shouldn't be. In the Faith Mind poem, one of the great writings of Zen, the Zen ancestor Seng San in the Faith Mind poem says this wonderful line: to set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind, is the dis-ease of the mind. And it truly is, when we're constantly setting up what we like against what we don't like, should be, shouldn't be, want, don't want, it creates so much tension, so much dissatisfaction, dis-ease, so much anxiety, worry, and discontentment in our lives. I want it like this, and I don't want this to change. And so we wish for things to be a certain way. We wish for them to remain a certain way because that's what's comfortable for us. That's what's familiar. That's what we feel is manageable. I like it this way. I can manage this, but I don't know about this. This is uncertain to me. If it changes, it's uncertain. And we don't like uncertainty because uncertainty is change. And so we so easily get stuck in our comfort zones of what we want and don't want, what we like, don't like, and the things and the people in our life that we wish for them to remain fixed and unchanging. We want for people to remain the same, and we don't like it when we feel like they're changing. They're somehow, you're changing on me. You've changed. What's going on? We don't like this. We feel uncomfortable with this. We become so conditioned to want this fixed and unchanging delusion because when we want things to not change, to never change, to never unfold into something else, this is delusion. And we become so fixated on that that we resist the ever-shifting and ever-flowing, ever-changing flow that is life. That is the reality of life and not the delusion that we're more comfortable with. Things not changing, things remaining the safe, remaining the same, remaining just as they are and not changing. And that, of course, this often leads to the third type of suffering that was taught by the Buddha, this all-pervasive dissatisfaction that we begin to feel, this all-pervasive discontentment and dis-ease that he referred to as ignorance. And ignorance is basically a distorted view or a distorted understanding of reality. We don't understand reality as it is. And resisting impermanence and change, that ever-changing flow that all life is characterized by. The Buddha taught that there are three dharma seals, these three characteristics that are part of all things, all life. And impermanence is one of those three dharma seals, that all life is characterized by impermanence. All beings, all things are characterized by impermanence. In other words, things are always changing. We are always changing. All beings are constantly changing. And when we really look at reality, all things are constantly in change, constantly in flow, in flux, ever changing, ever flowing and unfolding. Alan Watts says that we resist change, ignorant of the fact that life is change and change is life. You must understand the idea, the truth of the world being in flux. And to understand this truth of impermanence, of change, of the world constantly being in flux, understanding this truth is right view. It is right understanding, the first aspect of the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path. In the Eightfold Path, the Buddha began with right view and right understanding. Right view or understanding of what? That life is of the nature of impermanence. All life is of the nature of impermanence. This is one of the truths of this life, that everything is constantly changing, including ourselves. But the ego mind so often fears change. The ego mind is uneasy with change, and so, of course, it resists and fights against change. Again, it falls back into those habitual patterns of I want this and I don't want that. I like it to be this way and I don't like it when it changes and becomes that way. I like it when this person behaves in this way. I don't like it when they change and start behaving in a different way. But the ego mind resists this. It's uneasy with this change, and so it's constantly fighting against change, trying to push it away, trying to avoid it, trying to deny it. And in doing so, we resist the natural flow and the unfolding nature of life, the reality of life as it truly is. This is how life truly is. Science has shown this repeatedly, that life is of the nature of change, that all things are constantly changing. Our bodies change in every moment. It's constantly changing. We're constantly changing. Our thoughts, our ideas, our opinions are changing throughout our life. If we think about some of the things that we believed in or thought about when we were young kids or when we were teenagers, how many of us believe in all of those things right now in this moment? I doubt that there's any one of us who feels exactly the same and has not changed any idea, opinion, belief that we had when we were young. We may hold on to some things, and even those things may change over time, but so many other things are completely gone. Those things have changed, and so we are constantly changing. And we want to hold on so tightly to what has been, to who we've been, to the ways in which we think things and people have been, that we can't see or we reject what is right now, to what is becoming right now, in this moment, in each moment. We want to freeze and harden life into a kind of fixed and almost solid sculpture. We want to fix life into this solid thing, this solid sculpture that we can just hold on to and that we think we can keep coming back to it and looking at it over again the way we do a sculpture. But even seemingly solid sculptures, of course, crumble or fade over time. So they change as well. But the ego creates its own reality. It begins to create its own realities, one which it thinks is familiar and is safe. But as the Buddha taught, it's ultimately a delusion to think that things can be fixed and completely unchanging. And one of the primary functions of the ego is really self-protection and self-preservation. The ego's function is one of self-protection and self-preservation. And in that, the ego is necessary. The ego is necessary in its way and in its functions. We tend to hear that word ego, and we have certain thoughts about that. We think that ego is automatically a bad thing. You know, we think of it in the terms of egotistical, someone being egoic, and we think ego is a bad thing. But ego is necessary. We need the ego. It has its function. But, and many of you have heard us talk about in the past, that we cannot stamp out or get rid of the ego. No matter how much we try, we cannot get rid of the ego. Nor should we. As I said, the ego has its function and it is necessary. And if we engage in this kind of war, trying to eliminate ego, thinking that practice, that the Dharma teachings are about getting rid of the ego, eliminating the ego, then we're always going to be at war with it, because we're never going to get rid of the ego. Practice and meditation are not about trying to get rid of ego, but rather they are a way of recognizing it, to see it more clearly, and to see its delusions and its distortions more clearly. those distortions and delusions that the ego tends to create. And so we need that ego mind to a certain extent, but the ego mind easily becomes confused in its function of self-preservation. And so it resists change because it thinks that in order to preserve what I have right now, what I feel right now, what I think I believe right now, I must protect this, I must hold on to it, and I cannot allow it to change. And so it creates this distorted reality. We create a distorted, fixed reality, one which we believe we can control. We believe we can control it and maintain it in a very fixed way so that we continue to feel safe and comfortable. But of course, this is not in harmony with reality, because moment by moment, we and all things are changing. We are constantly becoming. We are constantly in this process of continuous becoming. Life and everything in it is of that nature of constantly flowing, constantly becoming. Life is constantly in creation. Life is constantly in creation. And we, each one of us, are co-creators in this ceaseless flow of changing time and life and creation. Each one of us are co-creators in this because we are constantly creating this life. We are constantly creating our unfolding life. And just as with the ego mind, if we engage in a struggle with change, just like we often think that we need to get rid of the ego, we come to a practice and we think, oh, it's about eliminating ego, which we cannot do and don't want to do. And if we engage in this constant struggle with change, then we're really diminishing that creative aspect of life. We're diminishing that creative aspect of our own life, our own ability to create this unfolding life. And just as Miles Davis said about music, if anybody wants to keep creating, they have to be about change. If we want to continue to unfold and create this precious life, then we have to embrace change, the reality of change. And meditation, this practice of meditation, allows us to really see this continuous becoming that we are, that each one of us is. This continuous unfolding, this arising and dropping away that is me, and also everyone else and everything else. And it does so not just conceptually, but experientially. To understand it conceptually is one thing, to hear a talk or read in a book that life is of the nature of impermanence and change and we must embrace change. To simply understand that from a conceptual standpoint is not enough. Meditation and the practice of Dharma allows us to experience this. We experience that unfolding and constantly changing reality of our life, of this precious life. When we sit down in that silence and we take the backward step, as Dogen said, we turn the light inward, we study the self. And in studying the self, we forget the self. We see that that self that I thought is myself, that fixed, unchanging self that I've always believed to be me, that was just a delusion. That's a delusion. And we begin to see the real self, this self that is not this fixed and unchanging thing, but this self that is constantly in creation, constantly unfolding. And meditation allows us to ask the eternal question again and again, who am I? Who am I in this moment? What is the reality of this life in this moment? Moment, not in a past that is never to be repeated, so why are we holding on so tightly to it? Not in a future that is not yet reality, so why are we grasping for it so desperately? But who am I and what is this life, this precious life, right now in this moment and in each moment of this life. Right now, in this moment, in each unfolding moment of creation, because this life is an unfolding creation. And so we don't need to resist change or struggle so much against change, which ultimately is the reality of our life anyway, despite our resistance to it. And in fact, when we really look at this deeply, it's so simple to see that the more we resist it and the more we struggle against it, the more we struggle against change and impermanence, the more suffering, the more discontentment, the more dissatisfaction we experience. And we are creating that dissatisfaction, that discontentment, by fighting against the natural flow and unfolding that is life. Again, as Alan Watts said, life is change. Change is life. And in meditation, we can see the fleeting and changing nature of all things, including the fleeting and changing nature of the thoughts in our mind. All those thoughts that are constantly coming and going, and we constantly want to grasp at this one and that one, but those thoughts are constantly arising, constantly dropping away. We can see this ceaseless flow, this unfolding, changing flow. Meditation practice allows us to see the transitory and transitional nature of all things, pleasant and unpleasant, joyful and difficult. It is all of the nature of change. And we can also see that change comes in many forms and faces. We fear change because we feel it's so uncertain and we want certainty. We want to grasp at certainty. We want to grasp at that safety, that comfort zone. But change really comes in many forms and faces. And it can, yes, it can take the forms of sudden loss, of difficult storms arising within us or those around us. It can take the form of challenging shifts or transitions in our life. And it can take the form of unexpected obstacles that we encounter. Change can take these forms and have these faces. But change also can take the form of hidden blessings that are uncovered in our life. Joyful new experiences, things that we experience in our life that bring us great unexpected joy. Welcome endings and shifts, things that perhaps no longer serve us or others well, and that we need to let go of, that we need for those things to change, to transform into something that is more conducive to our well-being and the well-being of others. Change can also take those forms and those faces. It can take the form or the face of exciting or fulfilling new opportunities that open up in our lives, if we are present for them and not just resisting them, denying them, trying to turn away from those opportunities, because they can take the form, change can take the form of very fulfilling new opportunities to love, to serve, to be present, to care for others and ourselves. And if we can stay present with change, we can embrace change and see it as a form of liberation, rather than something to be feared, rather than something to be resisted, rather than something that we need to run away from. And I want to share a quick excerpt. This is from Dharma teacher Martine Batchelor. She says, "Often we carry the impression that things are exactly the same. We may even feel that we are exactly the same. But of course we are not. We're actually constantly changing. Our bodies and moods and emotions change all the time, even if we're not aware of it. Through meditation and practice, we want to understand change as liberation and see how it can make a difference in our lives. So how is change a liberating factor? If we know change, if we experience change, then we can make the decision to do something different. In life, we have reactive habits and patterns, which can often be painful for ourselves and for others. You may notice mental patterns during meditation, how our thoughts sometimes are relatively repetitive. And we also have emotional patterns. You may say to yourself, I'm always angry. I'm always anxious. I'm always jealous. Or whatever it may be. While you may have a tendency toward those things, you're not experiencing them all the time or to the same degree. And for me, knowing that there is change within these patterns, within these emotions, this is liberating. And so we can look at change when we truly look at the nature of change, at the nature of impermanence in our lives. When we begin to understand change and even embrace change rather than fear it and reject it, we can begin to see that change can also be liberation for us. It can be a liberating force in our life. We can begin to let go of fear. We can begin to embrace change in a different way. And we can begin to let go of the attempts to reject or deny changing conditions in our lives, changing people in our lives. And this, again, is a right view or right understanding of change. This past Monday morning, during the early morning meditation, I shared a reading and a short talk with the morning meditation group that was about change. And this was from something from Roshi Pat Engil O'Hara, and she was talking about a member of her sangha, a woman, who was talking to her one time about how her 13-year-old daughter, her teenage daughter, they had always had a very close relationship. They were always very close, always talked to one another. But as her daughter was getting older and becoming a teenager, she was really struggling because she felt, my daughter's changing so much. She doesn't talk to me the way she used to. We don't have that same bond, that same relationship. And she was really struggling with this. And of course, simultaneously, well, number one, she's struggling because, of course, her thoughts automatically go to, I want her to still be my little girl. I want to have the same relationship that I've always had with her. I want to have that same closeness with her, that same bond with her. I don't want it to change. But of course, it is of the nature of her of change. Her daughter's growing up, she's becoming a teenager, and her daughter is also experiencing conflict. Okay? I don't want my mother to be constantly on top of me or constantly asking me questions, and I don't want her to treat me in this particular way. I don't want her to want me to spend all of my time with her. And so they're both struggling simultaneously with this change, with what I want, what I don't want, how I like it, how I don't like it, how it was, and I think it still should be this way, and no, it shouldn't be this way anymore. And I think we all experience something like this in one form or another. For me, I can say I've experienced it because I have three daughters, as I said, and I watch my three daughters grow up. And of course, when they're young, it's pretty easy. They rely on mom and dad for just about everything, and we have this responsibility to take care of them, to protect them, to guide them. But of course, they start to grow up and they start to change. And that becomes a struggle for a lot of parents. It was for me at times, to see them wanting to do things differently, for them wanting to experience different things that sometimes I was like, well, I don't know about that. And yet they want to experience different things, and they want to experience more independence. And ultimately, I think, really through this practice, it was one of those hidden blessings, because I was able to bring about change in my life and to begin to see that this is just the reality. My daughters are growing up and they're going to change, and I need to embrace that change, and I need to change and unfold with it, just as they change and they unfold. And so change, it went from something that I very much feared at times as a parent, to being more open to embracing that change. Because I realize if I continue to think of it, to go back to all of those old habitual patterns, that conditioning, with seeing my daughters changing, seeing our relationship change, then I'm always going to be like this. And this gets awfully tiring. This brings about suffering for myself. It will bring about suffering for them. And so I realize that what I need to do is more of this. To be able to let go of it. To open up to that change. To embrace it and to realize that there can be many blessings in that change as well. And there have been many blessings in that change. Our relationship is beautiful. And I think we have a great deal of trust. We have open conversations about just about everything. And a lot of that is because of letting go of that resistance to change. Letting go of that fighting against change and realizing that reality is of the nature of change and impermanence. And in doing this, in embracing change and really trying to understand change and to see it from a different perspective, this is a form of liberation. And we begin to in a sense, rewire our habitual conditioned ways of seeing and reacting. When we think of change, again, we often fall into those patterns of becoming so fearful and so resistant to change. And so we ourselves, through that resistance, through that fighting against change, we create our own crises, right? We create crises and we immediately go into crisis mode. Our automatic conditioned response is to go into crisis mode. But I've shared in the past, it's so interesting that the Chinese ideogram for the word crisis consists of two characters. And those two characters are danger and opportunity. Danger and opportunity. Those two characters make up the ideogram for the word crisis. We get so caught up in the danger part of it that we completely forget or lose sight completely of the opportunities. We're so wired when it comes to change to think danger. It's that automatic alarm goes off, danger, that we don't see the other face of it, opportunity. And so just as in jazz music, every chord and every chord change is an opportunity. An opportunity to create, to flow, to allow the unfolding of a new composition or a wonderful new take on an existing composition. So too, we are constantly in creation, constantly in flow, constantly in the unfolding composition of this precious life, your precious life. Change is a natural part of that unfolding composition. To flow and unfold with that change, to embrace the potential opportunity to create something new. And as you often hear us say at the end of every program, at the end of every meeting that we have here, every time we come together, you hear us say, opportunity is too often lost. Do not squander this precious life.